Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
We're going to turn first to the issue of parking. Dan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colm.
The state of driving in the country, or more particularly, Dan, people's ability to park, enter and exit car parks. You've been at your living evidence of how standards are dropping.
My problem is in car parks, shopping centres and elsewhere, that you park your car and you park it properly. You go in and do a little bit of shopping, and when you come out, you discover someone has hit your car. Now, I don't mean a small tap with the door. I mean where someone has actually tore the side out of it or hit the bumper and caused a lot of damage. And those people walk away from the scene.
No note under the under the wiper, no attempt to go into the shop for an announcement over the loud speaker system to say anybody driving car reg, could they come to the front and talk to customer service? Nothing, no attempt.
Nothing whatsoever. Right. Now, those people should realise it's actually a criminal offence to leave the scene of an accident. Now, I think most people in shopping centres and car parks don't realise this. Now, I've been talking to other people as well, have had the same problem, where people will hit their car and walk away from it.
Now, it hasn't just happened to you once. It's happened to you three times.
It's happened to me three times.
All right, take us back to the first time.
Well, the first time goes back a good few years ago in a hotel car park. And I was actually staying in the hotel overnight. And when I come out, the back of my car was badly belted, I suppose, with something. No car, obviously, or even maybe a truck. And it cost quite a lot of money that time. I don't know the exact amount. But moving forward to 3 years ago, I was in another shopping centre car park and went in to do a small bit of shopping. When I came out, my car again, the side was torn on it. It cost me that time $850 to repair it.
And what, when you say torn, are you talking about a paintwork scratch or are you talking about a groove cut into the side of the
car?
I'm
talking about a deep scratch.
Right.
Which, now, it might have been done with a shopping trolley rather than the car. I'm not too sure. But moving forward to this 22nd of June, just gone out a few weeks ago, I was in another shopping centre. I went in to get some messages to call to some friends I knew. And I was only in about 20 minutes, and when I came out, the whole bumper of my car was bashed, and the side was torn on it.
Back or front?
Yes, the back.
The back bumper, right, okay. And the side?
And the side. It looked like instead of someone trying to park beside me, instead of going a little bit and reversing back out, to decide to take a shortcut and take the back out of my car on the way in. And then, of course, disappear. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only person that this has happened to. Now, this time I've got a rough quotation for €1,500.
€1,500 to repair the damage on your car at the moment. So, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to pay it yourself your insurance? Or?
No, I cannot afford to do that. Because with the cost of insurance at the moment and the cost of everything, I don't know what I'm going to do. Because I'm an old-age pensioner, just going on 80 years of age. And that's about it.
Right. And how long have you had the car? What kind of car is it? How long have you had it?
I've only had it a year.
A year, right.
Now, the reason I've had a year was I had an old car before that, but unfortunately, a member of my family happened to die last 2 years ago, and in his will, he left me some money to buy a new car. Right. I put money to the old one to buy a new one.
All right. Well, I'm sorry, first of all, to hear about the bereavement, and secondly, yeah, you know, when you put that money into buying a car, there's obviously a bit more of just being any other car to it. There's, I suppose there is an emotional element to this too.
Yeah. Now, I mind that car. Now, since this has happened to me a few times, I actually park my car a good distance from the entrance to the shop itself so that people won't park beside me because I know what's going to happen. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only person that this has happened to. I'd like to hear from other people. But, like, it's just so people are so inconsiderate. I realise maybe they have money to repair their own car, but I don't.
And, you know, going back 15 years ago, it was a hotel car park, shopping centre, 3 years ago, and Sunday the 22nd of June, around lunchtime, happens again. At any point in any of those instances, was there CCTV available from any of those car parks?
Yes, there was.
There was, right, okay.
the hotel wouldn't entertain it, said it didn't cover that area. The second instance, 3 years ago, I went back into the shop and said, do you have CCTV? And they wouldn't entertain me. They said, contact the guards. We can't tell you anything. And the third time was the 22nd of June. I went back into the shopping centre and basically they said they had CCTV, but the camera was on a glitch. So they couldn't do anything.
There was what? A glitch in the camera, was there?
The camera.
Right. So did you contact the guards at any point? As you say, you know, a collision is a collision. So, and for even, whether you were going through your insurance...
Yes, I did contact the guards.
Yeah, take one.
And in fairness, they did call up to the shopping centre. But they were told as well there was a glitch on the camera that they couldn't see. Now, the shop actually told me before that that they had seen the incident. But then when the guards turned up, they said there was a glitch on it. So I don't know.
Right, so the security person may have seen it happen in real time, but there was some glitch with the recording.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, something like that.
So your circumstances are such that you're not going to be able to pay for the repair of this, and you don't want to risk the increased cost to your insurance as a result of this either. Is that where you are? So are you left with a situation where you're going to have to just leave the car in its damaged state and continue to drive it?
What happened was the crash repair crowd that I went to, they said they've seen this time and time again. They have more instances of this happening in car parks. That's a lot of their business at the moment. But I told them, I said, I cannot afford to pay the full amount. And he said, well, if you like, he says, I might be able to touch it up somewhere that would look a bit respectable looking. And that's where it is at the moment. I tried 5 insurance companies before I got the one I have at the moment. They were all sky high. This one was fairly reasonable. And I don't want to lose that insurance company.
And tell us, what is it, you know, from your own estimation of what happened, or I don't know whether somebody in the shop told you, can you describe what you think happened to the car?
Where I was parked, and like I've seen a number of occasions, people will not drive in properly or reverse in properly to a parking spot. They take a shortcut by driving straight across.
As in through another car parking space, is it?
Yeah, instead of reversing back out and then driving straight into the car parking spot. Now, they do the same thing on bends at the moment. They don't go around the bend anymore on the road. They go across the bend. That's why we have a number of accidents, I would think.
And do you think it's a problem with the size of the car parking spaces? Is that, you know, they're too small for people, or that people just, their ability to park, to reverse into a car parking space, is it a fault with the driving test? Where do you think...
Well, a lot of those shopping centres were built years ago and the car parking spaces were put in. Cars were smaller. You park your car now, you get out of your car, you have plenty of space. You come back out, when you try to get into it, you can't because there's a big SUV parked beside you and they've taken up nearly a space and a half. They're in on your over your white line. And then when you go to reverse back out of your parking spot, you cannot see what's coming because they're blocking your view. So if spaces need to be made bigger, or cars need to be made smaller, which won't happen.
Or people, you know, need to improve their driving.
Well,
you don't hold out much hope of that, do you?
It's like the driving is unbelievable on the roads at the moment.
Right. You're driving a good few years yourself, are you?
I'm driving for, a good 50 years.
Right.
And I've never been involved in an accident that I've caused myself. Others have caused one or two to me, but not me to them. I had an instance where a man went straight through a stop sign and hit me. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, I suppose, now.
Yeah, but I mean, look, at this stage, you know, bad driving, bad parking, it's kind of been the bane of your life.
Well, bad parking in shopping centres, as I said, is crazy. And people drive around shopping centre car parks as if it's Mandela Park. Like, they never even look what's coming or what's going out. They nearly run over you when you're walking out with the shopping trolley. It seems to be all, oh, I'm in a panic. I'm in a hurry. And then you hear them saying, oh, I've been on Facebook all morning. Maybe if they got off their phones and drove their cars properly, it might suit them better.
But you're talking about driving around the ramps of shopping centres. Is it up and down the ramps looking for car parking spaces, just swinging the car around, is it?
I mean on a flat surface, a ground level car park. The speed going around is unbelievable.
Do you think they need to stick ramps in shopping centres to slow people down? Has it got to that stage?
I don't know what they need to put into it. They need more security cameras.
That work?
Yeah, does work. And then I suppose GDPR has spoiled a lot of this because people can't find out themselves.
And is it worse since you had... Sorry, go on, yeah.
A friend of mine got hit there, I think, about 2 years ago. It was on camera. She went back into the hotel and said, I'm after being hit. The manager looked at the video and said, yeah, he said, I can see where it's after being hit. But he said, I can't tell you anything about it. So that was reported, but nothing done about it either.
It has to go through the guards. But she didn't get any satisfactory follow-up, did she not?
No.
Right.
No.
And do you think things are getting worse since, you know, 15 years ago when you got the first tip or even when... was the person running the stop sign before the first car park incident or after that? Do you think?
The stop sign was... It was out on an open road.
Right.
Separate from the hotel one.
How long ago was that?
It could be 15, 16 years ago, possibly.
So, I mean, they're not that far apart. But, I mean, what I'm asking is, have things got worse, in your opinion, since those early accidents?
Certainly. When you're going into a car park to see the way people are parking, when you get out of your car, when you see the way they drive into a car park, drive into a parking space, it's unbelievable the way they drive in. As I said, it's straight across. They won't take the time to reverse back a little bit or whatever and drive straight in. Even when you come back out and look at cars the way they're parked, diagonally across the parking spot.
And you would think things would be getting better, wouldn't you? Because people, you know, can't drive unaccompanied on a provisional license. They have to do driving lessons. They have to put up the novice driver N sign on their car. So in theory, and accident rates overall have come down. So you would think that things would be getting better in this regard. But in your experience, and you've been hit three times in a supermarket or hotel car park, it's...
Well, the thing, Colm, is it's not young people. There's a lot of old people there. It's middle-aged people. It's right across the edge. In fairness, I've never seen young people parking badly in car parks. I've seen mainly middle-aged people in their 30s, 40s.
Right.
People that seem to be in the panic, that have to run in and grab the shop and then get back out. Because they're nearly the same in the shop itself. They run over you with trolleys. And then you come out to the car park and they're run over you. So I don't know where you're safe.
Right. It's a kind of a lack of consideration. You're right, though. I mean, you aren't the only person here. Eileen has called in. It's a familiar story to her. Eileen, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colin.
What happened to you?
Well, I had a good experience, actually. I was in the local supermarket, a large supermarket, and parked the car and got out. I was actually going to bring my dog for a walk. Now, the dog was on the passenger side, so I got out the dog on the passenger side, went off for 20 minutes, half an hour, came back, and there was a big dent in the side of the passenger door, which is the only reason I knew it straight away was because it wasn't there when I left the car, and it was there when I got back.
Right.
And it was two panels, like, had been dinged right in. So I went into the supermarket and asked the security guard, and he was really helpful. And he went back through it. He saw the incident happening. He saw the woman getting out of the car, getting out of her car, examining the damage and getting back into her car and driving off.
Right.
Which was lovely. And he couldn't tell me because of GDPR, so he rang the guards. And the guards came up. They checked it. They rang. They got the woman from her reg. They rang her and gave me her number, and I rang her, and she paid for the damage.
Oh, so you contacted her directly, and...
I can't remember, did she ring me, or did the guards just say that she was going to pay? I can't remember exactly what happened,
right.
But the guards said that she had agreed to pay for the damage. She accepted responsibility for crashing into me.
And what was the damage? I mean, how much did it cost her?
It was nearly 900 euro.
900 euro, yeah. Right. So a fair bit of damage done to the two panels on the car.
Well, and I only did panel beating because it's not a new car. Like, I could have I was annoyed enough that I could have gotten new panels, but I didn't.
Right. You let her off lightly enough then, didn't you?
Yeah, right. I just found the supermarket very helpful, that's all. And right. The Gardaí.
Well, you wouldn't have been tempted just to get the panels to teach her a lesson about leaving the scene of the accident and trying to get away with it. Did you contemplate that at all?
I considered it, right? But my conscience now, I think.
Right.
No, I don't think so. But anyway.
Okay.
Positive.
A bad experience that turned out to be a good experience as far as the supermarket was concerned. Miriam, good afternoon to you. This is familiar territory to you as well. Hello, Miriam, you're there, are you? We'll go to Mags. Mags, this is familiar territory to you, is it?
It is, Colm, yes. It's about 20 years ago, it could even be more, and I was hit in a car park similar to your guest on there, and the car park attendant had noted it, and I think had taken the registration. So I reported it to the guards, and I had that information. And anyway, when the guards eventually came back to me, they said that they had traced the car and it was an uninsured car. But what that meant was there is some fund, whether the state funds it or whether the insurance companies pay a percentage into it.
I think all insurance policies pay something into it to cover the accidents with uninsured driver. Is it the Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland? I'd have to check out the name, but I know what you mean though, yeah.
Yeah, so that I didn't have to pay for the repairs of my car because they were able to identify it was an uninsured car. But I don't know whether there's something similar if you cannot trace who actually hit you. Is there some sort of a catch-all safety fund similar to that for your guest there, rather than having to go through his own insurance?
Anyway, it worked out for you. What was the damage to the car? Can you remember?
I can't remember. It was bumper damage, like that corner of the bumper, you know what I mean? They'd hit me reversing out or reversing in or something. And, you know, I'm sure it was a 400 or 500 quid at the time. I can't even remember. It's that long ago.
But it got paid out anyway.
Paid out, didn't cost me a penny. There was nothing on my insurance, no claim on my insurance.
So. Yeah, I just double checked it there. The Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland paid out there. I think they are paid for, their fund is paid for through all insurance policies. Barbara, you think, is it down to the drivers? Is it people becoming less considerate? What do you think it is?
Okay. Thank you. Hello. I'll tell you what it is. It's nobody's interested at all about how they are driving on the roads. They speed, they don't see the speed limits, what they do, but they ignore them. They don't know how to drive when they come into roundabouts. They don't know how to drive on the M50. We are a disaster, complete and utter disaster.
Now, you say this from a position of being a driving instructor.
Indeed, yes.
Right.
Yeah. And when I'm teaching my students, the one thing I say, your life is very important. If you're in a car with somebody that's erratically driving, tell them to stop and get out. Just get out of the car. You do not need to be. Car is like a gun. You can kill yourself or you can kill somebody else. We have no idea what's going on out in the road at the moment. I was just saying to your assistants there that when I'm driving now, you know yourself, if an orange light turns, if you've gone beyond a certain point, you must go through it. It's safer than to slam on the brakes. Not only have you gone, but three cars will go through a red light now.
Mm.
There's no regard for the red light anymore. There's no regard for indications, especially a left indication off a roundabout. If you're doing the first exit, you should be indicating as you approach where you come to. So you should be telling the people on the right what your intention is. People don't use their indicators at all.
No, that's not just an Irish phenomenon. I noticed I was overseas last month and the indicator was an optional extra. I actually, at one point, it was being used so little that when I was going into roundabouts, I began to think, is this the done thing in this country? But anyway,
that's where we're at. But that's where we're at. And I think it's very hard for new students that are trying to teach them the right way to learn to drive, but they're watching everything else that's around them. I see L plates and they're out there driving alone. I see people still in Ireland failing tests and driving off on their own. And I have pulled it up on them. I said, do we not have a responsibility to those people to say you must not go out in that car? You should turn up with somebody with a full license. It's still going on in Ireland.
Any hairy experiences in the old dual control car while you're giving lessons?
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
I have quite a lot of foreign students at the moment. So, you know, we're talking...
Side of the road issues.
Not only that, but they look at the traffic light. I had one in particular, and I said, okay, we've gone too far. We have to go through this. It's an orange light. But because the other side had turned red, he thought he had to stop again.
Right.
And we're in the middle of a crossroads. So... And two other cars followed us, so they weren't very happy. So they started to beep him.
Which never really helps, does it?
No, it does not help.
Okay, where do you stand?
People would take more consideration.
Where do you stand on the use of using your hazard lights to say thank you in an overtake? Is that just politeness, or is that something that's an egregious breach of your car lights? What do you think?
You shouldn't really be using your hazard. The only time I really use my hazards, one, if I break down. But two, if I'm coming down the motorway and I see in advance things are slowing down and I can see the cars coming at speed and they might not realise that things have changed, that's when I tip on my hazard lights on the motorway.
Okay, but when people move over and allow an overtake and then you see the car passing by and tapping the hazards to say thanks on the way past and they get a return flash of the headlights, you're not a believer.
No. You don't need to be doing that. You can wave your hands in your mirror.
Right.
All
right. Any other hairy incidents as a driving instructor? Is that the worst? I mean, it sounds, but that it sounds like you're doing okay. Yeah. 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 All right.
But thank you very much. I just needed to say, I just want people to use their indicators. They're there for a reason.
Okay.
And to, you know, slow down. And we have 30 kilometres per hour in our main towns now. Nobody's doing it. Not even the buses. Nobody's doing it. So I'd love them all just to take a little bit more consideration and maybe we won't have so many deaths on our roads.
Okay, we have more people on this. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We're back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And if you are the family syndicate that won that €250 million lotto and you want to elaborate further on your plans and dreams with that, or even whether or not you'll be buying a better class of ham and cheese for your favourite sandwich, you can get us on WhatsApp 087 484 8888. Email us liveline@rte.ie, or of course, as you just heard there, 0818 715 815, if you want to ring in. Miriam, back to car parking. Not even church car parks are sacred.
No, I was parked outside a church on Easter Sunday, not this Easter Sunday, a couple of years ago. Came out after Mass and the whole side of my car was destroyed by somebody who had tried to park beside it and left. No note, no nothing, no CCTV available, and I was stuck with the bill to pay for it.
Right. How did you have any idea how the damage was caused? Had they badly reversed or badly driven into the space parallel to you?
Yeah, I'd say they had tried to drive in, scrape the car, realised the spot was too tight for them, and they pulled back out again. So they doubled up on the scrape on the way back
out.
What
kind of damage are you talking about?
Well, both doors on the passenger side had to be redone and cost about €2,000.
So when you say redone, I mean, did the panels have to be replaced, or were they had to be replaced, right?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it was very bad. Yeah,
€2,000.
I know.
And so what way did you go about it? Did you have to dip into savings or?
Yeah,
you did.
Yeah, I didn't want to risk losing my own no claims, you know, when it wasn't my fault. So anyway, it's some people just don't know how to park, to be honest, you know. So similar with your first caller there now, I would make an effort now to park, you know, where there's plenty of spaces.
Right. And would you encourage person to examine their conscience?
Absolutely. I think it's shocking. I think people really badly behave to walk away without leaving a phone number or something, you know, to contact you with, you know, for causing that amount of damage.
It's a bit of an anomaly, isn't it?
They did not know. you know.
Were they just parking in the church? I mean, it's terrible to think that somebody, you know, went there and it's supposed to be about do unto others as you would have do unto you.
I know.
And that's what they left your car with. Any CCTV in the church to enable you to check? None.
Yeah. So anyway, it just reminds me. I'll never forget it being Easter Sunday. So anyway, there you go.
What do you do? Offer it up.
I know. Yeah.
All right, Terry Curtis, you're another driving instructor.
That's correct, yes.
How are you doing? Terry Quirk, sorry, you're another driving instructor.
Would you agree that
standards are dropping, or is more work needed on parking?
I was going to make the point on parking. When I park my car, no matter where I park it, I get my phone out and I photograph the insurance list and the reg of the car in front of me and the car behind me. And that eliminates the risk. If something happens, you have details of the car. Does it happen? Do people drive off? Absolutely. I witnessed it once at Dundrum Shopping Centre. I seen a car crash into a car and he was about to drive off. I went over to him and I said, are you going to leave a note on the car? He did leave a note and he drove off, but I took his details anyway. And what was written on the note was, somebody thinks I'm leaving my number here, but I'm not. And that was written on the note on the windscreen. But I had taken the details anyway. But that's what I do, and that lowers the risk. No matter where I park or when I park, I take my car, phone out, photograph the tax insurance list, registration, and the car behind me also.
But you don't. If there's anything done to your car, you're not going to know that that was the car that did it if you're gone for a while, are you? I mean, that just happens to be the car that's parked when you initially parked.
But the car's traceable, and if there's a telltale mark on my car, there'd be a telltale mark on the car that hit me. If it was that car, true, it's not foolproof, absolutely.
Right.
If another car parks, but it's a little insurance in ways, you're lowering, you're given a 50-50 chance that you might be able to find out who it was.
Why, did you check the note? Going back to this other instance.
I went back to the note, and what was on the note? The cheek of him. He said, the man here thinks he's standing here looking at me, thinks I'm writing my name and details on it, but I'm not. And that was all he put.
And did you ever hear what happened afterwards? Was there a satisfactory claim for it?
I left my number, the man phoned me up and I told him. And he was so thankful to me, and I had the reg of the car. Yeah, and he followed up and he got sorted. But that's like the amount of people that will like a hit and run, will drive off. You know, how many times do you drive by and someone's mirror is hanging off the door because they didn't push it in and some car driving by? I agree with a lot of your callers. Sometimes the driving standard is appalling. People do their driving test and they pass, and then they say, now I can do what I like. You see end drivers driving around, and the rule is sometimes there's no rule.
And you don't know what the cost of it was, that incident there where Smarty Pants decided he was going to say, your man behind me thinks I'm putting my details on the note.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but the front of the car was bashed in. He ploughed into the car. He was standing there and he was going to drive off. No, I don't know, but that was a real incident.
And what was the interaction like? Did he pretend to say, oh God, I didn't notice and I'm just going to fill out this note
here?
No,
I didn't know.
Was he annoyed at you?
He was, yeah. And I said, you know, put your details on the car. And he got out of the car. He didn't really say anything to me. He just got a piece of paper out, and, as cheeky as you like, wrote the details down, put it on the windscreen and drove off. But I had taken his details anyway. And then I just went over to see, more or less, who was it? What was his name? And that's what was on it. It was the man beside me thinks I'm putting my name on the car here, but it's not. Hard looking, drove off.
That's great satisfaction from your own point of view to have caught him out.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Right, and you're a driving instructor. Any hairy teaching experiences while you had somebody out in the dual control car?
Well, you can never switch off. You've all the time, when you think you can relax and you think you have somebody under control, that's at the moment in time that they will drive through a red light. So you just don't switch off. You have your foot on that brake constantly ready to go if anything happens. But the standard of learner drivers can do two fairies. You know, they have... In Ireland, they have foreign license holders can have a reduced EDT, meaning that they only have to do 6 lessons. And talking to the guys in the RSA too, they know this, but there seems to be nothing done about it. A lot of people come here with a foreign license, and the foreign license holder has told me, lots of them tell me directly, that they give money in the country where they're getting the license from to get the license. You hand over money, they give you the license, and they've never driven. And they come here and they have to do 6 lessons. I'm sure other driving instructors will come on and agree. I know.
Right. In your opinion, you think there should be, just for an Irish licence, and you're trying to get it, should be 10 lessons plus maybe the 12 pre-test or the 2 pre-tests.
I'm not saying that. Now, some people are very good, but some people that come have never driven, and they tell me, have you driven before? No, you give money and you get a licence.
All right, okay. Like once upon a time in the 1970s in Ireland with the amnesty, where people, a cohort of people went in and paid for their licences and that was it, away they went.
And lots of people had to do that in 1979. They gave it an amnesty. Well, pre 1964, there was no test. You just went in and got a licence. 79 was the amnesty if you had the 2 provisional, maybe up to 3 provisional licences. I can't remember exactly, but they gave you the free licence then.
Along.
That was 1979.
All right, Terry, thanks for that. Martin Kane, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Philip. How are you?
Not too bad. It's Cullum here, but not to worry about it. Tell us about your idea. Not at all, your grant. But you have an idea and you think that this might be able to at least mitigate the situation that we heard from Dan in the beginning, where if the CCTV camera's not working, that the car itself is filming it. So tell us about your idea.
Yeah, well, my idea would be, I work in retail, and in the car park, the security man is constantly being asked for detail on the anything that happened in the car park, i.e. hitting the car. But if the car itself has a camera 360, like all the big trucks have now, their trucks have 360 degree cameras, front, back, side, and that eliminates an awful lot of the problems.
And do you see it a lot?
Retail. It's happening every day, maybe definitely every second day, you know.
Really? And how many of them would be drive-offs, and how many of them would be leave a note or contact the shop?
they're all drive-offs.
Really?
yeah, you're dealing with the public, you know.
And what is the protocol? Because you're a retailer, we've heard kind of mixed experience. Somebody comes into the shop and goes, somebody's after giving me a tip in the car park. What are your obligations as a retailer in this?
Well, they're not obliged to give it, you know. Your GDP, you see.
Right.
You know, they look into it, but they're too busy. The security guard is too busy, you know. He's 101 different things to do, you know.
He's monitoring what's going on inside the shop as well, of course.
Inside the shop, yeah, theft and you name it, what's going on, you know. But the camera in the car, the 360 degree, would solve all that. I'm looking at my own car here now at the moment, and there's sensors all around it. And a camera, just a little, it's like a little thumbtack, that's all that's in it. Your camera can be put into that.
The only thing about the sensor in the car for parking is it starts to get panicky before the car is in danger.
Yeah,
and people
maybe start
ignoring that high-pitched beeping sound when they're doing the kind of parallel park.
The camera just be independent unit. And be all recorded in the car.
Okay.
So if there's a problem, you take the disc out or whatever, and there you go. You bring it to the insurance company, or the insurance company will probably look for it anyway, you know.
Mm. I could tell them a whole hell of a lot more about your driving, probably, too. But anyway, maybe not. All right, thanks, Martin. Margaret, good afternoon to you. Thanks a million for calling. Margaret, good afternoon to you. Right.
Good afternoon.
You're like Dan. You've got multiple wounds in car parks.
Well, no. I tell you what. I've been responsible for 2 little incidents in a car park. And I've done something about it. I've gone, found the owners. In one case, it was in a restaurant. I was coming out and said, oh, my God, Lucas, I scratched that car. And I did. I went in, went round to all the people. I said, is this your car? Lady came out and said, yeah, that's my car. I said, look, I have a scratch there. I'm sorry about it. Oh, yes, she said, it was in the garage this morning. Do you know what? I'd like you to pay for that. I said, fine. And, okay, I said, I'd be happy to do it. And I did. I paid the bill. She said, it's at the garage. I went 2 days later and paid her bill.
Right.
But I felt happier to do that.
And was there any damage to your own car on that occasion?
No damage to my own car. As a matter of fact, there was very little damage to her car. But anyway, look, she said, I've just got a job in it. And I said, OK, I'll fix that scratch. Now, there, sometime about last year, I was coming into Dunn's car park and I must have taken the corner too sharply. And I saw, oh my God, sure, I have done a little dint on the there beside the bumper. And I said, what shall I do? I looked around, there was nobody there. And I said, look, I put my number, my mobile number under her windscreen wiper, and so on. I did that. The lady was from Castle Island. She contacted me that night, and she said, well, you know, it'll have to be fixed. I said, fine. And she said, the car will be brought to such and such a place, and mentioning a place in Tralee, and can you go and pay for the damage, and that'll be that. So I did. I paid for it. And it was €470, but she said, I'll give you €20 off.
Right. And Camille, did you deliberate in your own head? Did the thought even occur to you to drive off?
You know, it did, but I said, that's the wrong thing to do. I said, for God's sake, you can't do a thing like that. You wouldn't like it done to yourself. You know, that's what I said to myself, just for a minute, especially with the lady with the, where I put my mobile number under her windscreen wiper. But then I've been the beneficiary of a kind deed myself. There last year I was coming from Dublin, called into the Obama Centre to use the facilities, walked off, was down as far as Rathkeel on my way to Kerry. Oh, my God, no trace of my handbag.
Oh, no.
No trace of my handbag. Oh, my God.
Had you left it on the roof?
No. I said, the only place I could register it is in the Obama Centre in the toilet facility. Back I went. I said, well, now it's gone. A handbag to be left there late at night. Went in. It was there.
Still in the toilet. Hadn't even been handed in.
No. It had been taken out. Probably somebody, one of the staff were in there cleaning and brought it out. And as I'm on my way out, and I stood there by the guy at the desk, and I said, that's my handbag. Not alone that. Everything was in it. So you can have good things happen to you as well.
Right.
You do good deeds, and somebody else will do it back to you.
Right. Well, it sounds certainly in the tipping cars in the car park of things, it sounds like you're in a minority, a golden minority at that. But thanks, Margaret. We're going to take a short break. Back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Now, we touched on Ben Healy's amazing achievements in the Tour de France there yesterday. But if you are following the action or you're looking at photographs in the newspapers of the dramatic scenes from cycle racing, we're going to talk to somebody now who knows a thing or two about that. Jacques Nutan, good afternoon to you.
Yeah, how are you, Colin?
I'm good, thanks. You've taken photographs from some pretty dangerous places as a photographer on the Tour de France. Tell us what your job was from the mid-80s to the early 90s.
Well, I was sitting in the back of a motorbike on all the races on the continent from 85 to 91, I think. And so your job is to be at the best place you can in order to take a picture of the action. And it's a pretty tough job because there are a lot of other, you know, the tour is manic. There's millions of people on the road. There's dozens of team cars, hundreds of motorbikes. Nobody wants you there, basically. The riders don't want you there. The other photographers don't want you there. The race director shoots you out of the way all the time. And
it's like a competition within the competition.
Yeah, very much so. And it's a very, very male-dominated. So a lot of testosterone and a lot of adrenaline pumping and a lot of aggression.
So for people who don't know it, there's a guy driving the motorbike weaving in and out, and you're sitting, not in the usual way with your arms, two arms clinging onto him, you're sitting with your back to the motorcycle driver's back and you're holding your
car. I'm a motorbike pilot myself, but if you have somebody facing the other side, it's a recipe for disaster.
All
because
right.
When you lean right, the passenger behind you will lean left. No.
So how does it work then?
You just grab onto the motorbike pilot with your knees, and you have one camera on your right hand and one camera on your left hand, and do the best you can. But my motorbike rider was one of the top in, and I totally trusted him. And I remember one day going to from one stage to another. There was a break day, and we had 300 kilometers in between, and I fell asleep for 300 kilometers behind them. it's very hairy. No, in Spain you're allowed to sit halfway, but not in France. No.
Okay.
And in Spain, it's much more lethal because the Spanish motorbike riders are not professionals, and they treat the tour as a fiesta, and they drink every night, and the next day they miss gear, and they no.
All right. Well, possibly not in all cases. Look, unfortunately, Newtown, you're not on a great line there. It's kind of breaking up. But you do at the end of the famous Tour de France in 1987. Charlie Haughey, you were there when that famous picture was being taken. Yeah, what do you recall about that?
Which Charlie was trying to hug the limelight, and he was on the podium with Jacques Chirac, the then French Prime Minister, and Stephen, and all the other winners, and Stephen, and Charlie was trying to put his mug in between the picture and I shouted at him a few times. I said, Charlie, and he looked at me and I said, and then shouted, I said, get out of the way. I remember that. And I've done that for, I did it for 7 years, and it was very, very exciting and sometimes very dangerous. But that's the one thing I'm absolutely delighted to be out of it.
Right. And well, unfortunately, Newtown, your line is so bad, listeners aren't going to get the benefit of it. And I know you are under time pressure. Do you want to just give us the website there where your photos are available if people want to see some of the iconic stuff you've taken? Website. The famous one being that you took a shot downwards from a television aerial of Stephen Roach when he needed to be resuscitated. Yeah. Where can people see your work?
www.newtan.ie.
Okay, so that's www.newtan.ie. Thanks very much for calling us in on that. Apologies to let you go with the quality of the line, and lovely talking to you. Marie, you have been listening to the coverage this morning of the Irish League of Credit Unions Back to School Cost Survey, where around 700 people self-selected to fill in their experiences of going back to school costs. And the Irish League of Credit Union found that the cost of going back to school has risen about €300 in the last 2 years for primary and secondary. They say it's now at €1,450 for primary school parents and €1,560 for secondary school parents, an increase despite some of the reliefs that have been introduced. What's your reaction been to it?
Well, Colm, I just find that amazing, those figures, because I think things have really improved for parents in recent years with the school book scheme. Now all children, both primary and secondary, get their school books free. The school dinners have been introduced. A lot of schools have breakfast clubs, and a lot of the major chain stores have very good offers on uniforms. So I think that things should really have improved, and I'm very surprised at those figures.
Are you kind of scratching your head wondering where those figures came from and, what might be behind them?
Absolutely. I don't, unless you're buying very expensive uniforms or top-of-the-range runners. I don't see how those figures could be realistic, really.
Right. I think they say one of the costs for going back to school is the after-school cost. Now, the Irish League of Credit Union says it's €197 for that. I don't know whether they're talking about a monthly charge in that, but what I suppose you have difficulty believing, it'd be fair to say, it is that the actual cost of back to school, uniforms, books, whatever else, would come to anywhere near €1,450 or €1,560.
Absolutely. And after school costs, I suppose, kids go to various different activities, but I wouldn't consider that as a back to school cost. That's your own prerogative, what activities you want your child to do, whether they're swimming or music or whatever. You obviously have to pay for those, but the general cost of going back to school as in uniform, school books, lunch boxes, bags, I can't understand how that would come to that figure.
Right. 78% of people in 2025 said schools were asking for a voluntary contribution. Now, I don't know, they don't say what order of magnitude that's at, but could you see a voluntary contribution to school being a kind of a significant portion of that?
I wouldn't see it as a significant portion. I would think the voluntary contribution wouldn't be more than €100 for any school. And I suppose the reality of the situation is that schools cannot operate with the capitation that they get from the government. It's just probably not feasible for a school to operate in terms of heat, light bills, you know, costs spiral, and that they can actually operate with what they get for capitation. So I suppose schools have to get the money somewhere if they want to just heat like their building.
All right. So parents say that, you know, this is, and you know, we haven't seen the raw data of the survey. It's just what's published in summary on the League of Credit Unions website. They say that 50% of parents say that new gym gear is the number one item they're forced to deny. That's 50% of parents. And two in three, 59%, feel pressured to buy branded clothing. So are they areas where you could see maybe it hit the 1,450 if people were, if the other one in three are buying branded clothing?
I don't really, because I know a lot of schools don't allow branded clothing. You know, that it's a standard navy bottoms or navy top, that the children are not allowed brands for that particular reason, that they don't want competition between kids, or you have this brand or you have that brand, that it's a generic that they buy, and it's probably suggestions by schools as to where they can actually get those clothes for PE.
Right. So, I mean, you'd have some insight into school running costs yourself. You were a teacher and you also put kids through school. So,
yes.
Which, yeah. What was your experience? I mean, if you were sending kids back to school when your kids were in school, what kind of costs were you incurring then with books and everything else? Do you think those figures would tally more with what you were paying before these reliefs were being introduced?
I don't think that they would have been that high. I suppose back in those days, you bought the book second hand at the end of the year. Kids tried to sell their books. You knew what books you needed, so the kids bought the book second hand. And in recent years, then all schools have had to had a rental scheme. So you paid a nominal amount to rent the school books for the year and gave them back at the end of the year. So that would have cut down costs as well.
So would you like to kind of see a breakdown of this? I mean, out of curiosity, to see where the 1,450 is tallied up from?
I would, yeah. Just to see where, how that figure came up. How they came up with that figure. I just think it seems to be extremely high when you actually don't have to buy school books.
Right. Are you slightly envious of parents putting their kids through school today, or can you see not so much given the other cost of living in other areas their life?
No, I wouldn't be envious at all. I just think things have got so difficult for our parents. But I also think there's maybe lack of responsibility on the kids' side. You know, I used to see at the end of the year the pile of coats, jumpers, jackets left that nobody owned. You know, that kids obviously weren't being made responsible for their belongings. And I think maybe parents need to focus in a wee bit more on that. You know, you get one coat, please bring it home, put your name on it and be responsible, rather than thinking, oh, well, if you lose that one, you can get another one.
Yeah. Were you secondary or primary?
Primary.
Right. And at the end of every year, just a heap of lost and found in the corner.
Absolute. Yeah.
And never claimed?
No.
What did you do with them, by the way? Do you know what the school did with them?
Parents would have been notified that they were there if you had lost anything, to contact the school. Otherwise, they were given into the charity shop.
And what about uniform items? Were they kind of discarded at the end of the year as well? Would you have repurposed them within the school, or was it just general?
Yes, absolutely. No, well, uniforms, parents were always encouraged to give in good quality uniforms so that parents could buy them in August for the kids going back to school. And that still operates in the school.
Right. And how much would you be charging, like, by comparison to the new uniform?
Very nominal, a couple of euro. or a donation even, you know. But there would be very good quality uniforms available for parents. And I'm sure that's probably happened in a lot of schools.
Right. And does that make it harder for you to understand maybe why this or how this 1,450 figure was arrived at for primary?
Yeah, and the big supermarkets, they're advertising every day about bundles for school uniforms, and it all seems quite reasonable to me anyway.
Okay. Well, look, if there's anybody out there who's taken out the pen and paper as they've gone around to prepare for back to school and they've come up with something approaching the 1,450, or they can give an insight into where those costs come from, drop us a WhatsApp on 087-484-8888 or give us a shout on 0818-715-815. We're going to take a break. Back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
www.nutan.ie if you want to see some of those Tour de France photos, including the one of Charlie Haughey with his arm warmly around Stephen Roach at the conclusion of the 1987 Tour de France. The last time an Irish man was in the position Ben Healy is in now, wearing the yellow jersey. So they're all there. There's an array of them, and Stephen Roach looking decidedly less happy on the flat of his back, being resuscitated after the Le Plage stage in the Tour de France as well, with a mask on his face and that. I'm sure I'm mangling the pronunciation, but cycling aficionados and francophones can ring in and correct me if they want. Emma, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you keeping?
Not great, to be honest.
Okay, tell us about Blue.
Blue is a three-year-old Staffordshire Bull Terrier. We got her when she was 8 weeks old. And I've had her here for 3 years with no issues. And now I have been told that I have to rehome her in 7 days. Well, that was last Thursday, I was told that.
Okay. And how did you get Blue?
I got Blue from a friend, for my son. My son had OCD. He's an adult now. Like, he's not at the time he wasn't, but he has OCD, and he was very bad. Like, couldn't go outside, thinking something bad was going to happen. And then I got Blue to kind of help him get routine in and go out walking with her. And she's just been great. She's just been especially great for me as well, because I suffer with anxiety. So I feel like she just gives me routine and everything as well. The okay. kids absolutely adore her here too.
So you're living in an apartment, and it's the apartment is managed by Tua Housing, and it's you and your five kids and Blue there.
Yeah.
Okay, so pets are allowed, but the issue is with the breed, is it?
That's it. Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And when did you find that out?
Thursday.
And how did you find out?
Because I got a phone call on Thursday to state that she's a restricted breed. I literally got a phone call about fixing my front handle on my door, and then I was told that I wasn't allowed to keep my dog anymore.
And how were you told? Was it a short phone call, or
I was in the hospital with my daughter. She had hurt her finger, so I was actually in the hospital with the doctor, and he rang and he was just like, "And you have a dog?" And I was like, "Yeah, no secret, they've seen my dog before." And he was like, "Staffordshire Bull Terrier," and I was like, "Yeah." And then he was like, "Well, you're going to have to rehome her because she's a restricted breed."
Right. And come here, it does say, I mean, we found the Tua tenant safety policy there, and they do have a policy, and it lays out the restricted breeds, and there's photographs of all the breeds concerned, and the Staffordshire Bull Terrier is in there.
He is one of them. Yeah. I've noticed that. I looked it up straight away. Because we were never informed. When we first moved here, we were told we weren't allowed pets. And then after a few years, we were allowed them. But we were told once they weren't a nuisance.
Okay. So how long were you in the house before you bought Blue?
I'm here 14 years.
Right.
So 11 years.
And you got Blue from your friend, and you thought everything was hunky-dory until...
Yeah. Thursday.
Right. And did you know anything about the breed? I mean, had your friend told you about the breed? Did you know even that they were a restricted breed? Did you know what a restricted breed was?
I knew what a restricted breed was, but I didn't have a clue that they were on it, because they're quite small dogs. Do you know what I mean? They're very gentle also.
Well, what's your experience being with Blue? You know, because people would see Staffordshire Terriers, they've kind of well built, but as you say, kind of low to the ground. What's your experience been?
Brilliant. She's absolutely amazing. She is so gentle, so loving. All she does is sit around, and then if you bring her on walks, she loves like going up to people and getting pets. She's like any other breed dog. Do you know what I mean?
And is she
any dog?
And without naming names or anything else, I mean, did you encounter any issues with other tenants in the area when you were bringing her around? Never, right?
Never. No, they all love her here. They all love her.
So how did Tua Housing find out about her?
I haven't got a clue. Well, they had seen her before. Like, we've had, like, we do yearly housing inspections here. They have seen her. Like, so they have seen her. And nothing has ever been said about her. And now, all of a sudden, it's an issue.
Right. And this is the policy, and you'll have to what you in theory had 7 days from last Thursday, so you basically have till tomorrow to rehome her. Is that the state of play with you?
Yeah. Well, that's as far as I know now, yeah, because I've tried to get back in contact, but I haven't heard anything back at all.
And on any of the housing inspections in the last few years since you got Blue, did any of the housing inspectors say anything and say, you know, oh, that's a Staffordshire Terrier, or did they make any comment at all on the dog?
No, that she's cute.
Right. So they may not have recognised what breed she was.
Maybe not, no, but like, I'm just baffled about it all, if I'm being honest. It's just crazy. Like, when they were on the phone initially, they were like, she's a dangerous dog. And I was like, no, she's not. She is not dangerous at all. Any dog has the potential to be dangerous, not just specific breeds.
And when did you realise that she was a restricted breed? Was it just when Tua contacted you, or did you know before? Did you?
Remember when them rules came in, so from February.
Hmm.
2025, when all the rules came in, I knew that, like, I wouldn't have been allowed. I don't walk her without her muzzle.
All right, so you abide by all the kind of restricted breed rules, muzzle, length of lead, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And did you think that would satisfy the Tua that, you know, you were looking after and that she didn't represent a danger?
Well, once I was following the rules, I thought, like, everything would have been okay.
And have you had a discussion about the possibility of rehoming with the children, and what are they saying?
My kids are absolutely devastated. Devastated. Like, I don't understand how, like, when I was talking about her to the housing officer, like, and he was like, I was like, it's not just something that I can just throw away. It's a family member. Like, to me, like, she's one of my kids. My kids are absolutely devastated now that there's a possibility that I might have to give her away.
And what have you talked about? I mean, what are your options?
With Tua?
Well, yeah.
Apparently, if I keep her, I'm in breach of my tenancy agreement and I will be evicted.
And if you rehome her, what are your options there?
We just don't have her anymore then.
And can you think of what would that be like for the family?
That would be absolutely devastating. Absolutely devastating for us to have to give away. Like, we love her so much. And it's not her fault that she was born that breed. Like, if she was any other dog, we'd be allowed to keep her.
Right. But you can see why. I mean, maybe not everybody is as caring or as rule-following an owner as you are. And Tua don't want pets to be a nuisance, so they try and put some restrictions in place for the benefit of all of the tenants. So can you see on any level where they're coming from with this rule?
Well, I get, like, with certain breed restrictions, I think, like, if we do get a dog, that it should be on the individual dog. They could come out, review the dog, and then decide.
But they've decided that restricted breeds...
Yeah, are just not allowed on that day.
Right. Now, they did, their document on restricted breeds dates back to December 2022, and it's available in colour on the website, and it shows shows a picture of them, and sadly, I think under the Staffordshire Bull Terrier, one of the examples they give is a grey and white Staffordshire Terrier, and that's the same colour, yeah, as Blue.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I had her before that, so I even asked if that stood anywhere for me, like, if that stood, like, I'd had her before that policy came out.
All right, okay.
I'll tell them no.
But it's not Tua that made up the restricted breeds list. I mean, that's a government list, yeah.
It's a government list, yeah, but I rang the DLR and just talked, and he told me it was a very loosely followed list. Like, rule. If once I follow the rule, they should be okay. But, like, they have their own policy now, so they don't have the same policy as everybody else.
All right. So you've still been trying anyway to get in touch to see if there's any way that you could enter into some kind of negotiation and not have to rehome Blue. But have you come up with a plan B at all?
Well, my cousin said that she would take her for me. But she lives, like, she doesn't live close, so I wouldn't get to see her that much.
Right.
And then it'd be, like, traumatic for her also.
For the dog you're talking about, for Blue?
Yes. Mm. Like, she's known nobody else but us as well. It's just sad, every way you look at it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you do. I mean, I'm sure listeners can hear that. You are pretty sad about the whole situation.
I'm absolutely heartbroken, yeah.
And your adult son, who, you know, you partly got Blue for, is he still living with you? What are his thoughts on it?
He's absolutely devastated also. He's absolutely heartbroken. Like, he is her favourite person. So, he doesn't cope well with all this kind of stuff. So he tends not to, he goes in on himself, doesn't talk about it really.
Right.
Yeah.
And who would be the main kind of dog walker? Do you all take it in turns? Is she very much a family pet?
Oh, yeah, she's very much a family pet. Now, you have to be over 16 to be walking the dogs with the guidelines. So it's either myself or my son who walk her.
And what do other tenants and kids make of her when you're walking along around the place? Do they know her at this stage?
They absolutely love her. Yeah, they absolutely love her. Like, majority of the tenants here are absolutely devastated as well.
They are. They know what the situation is. And have you gone around kind of door to door and maybe tried to ask them, look, would you have an objection or anything else? Did you try the kind of one-to-one approach you did? Any luck with that?
Yeah, like, I just haven't been able to get back in contact at all with Tua. So, no matter, like, I feel like no matter what I do, I'm just fighting a losing battle, if you get me.
Okay, all right. Well, I suppose on some level, as plan Bs go, at least your cousin has stepped up. But that's still a situation you're pretty sad about.
I would be absolutely devastated. I mean, that's the... She's not just a pet. She's not just a family pet. She's our family, like.
Okay. All right, Emma, look, thanks for calling us.
No worries. Thank you so much for listening.